first part is, for my own sake, because I'm a little nervous, not because you wouldn't fully understand anything. So the first part is going to be about art in general and certain aspects of art that have been very meaningful in my life. I started out as an art history person, so I didn't become an artist until later in life. So my passion for art way preceded my execution of it. And because of this background in art history and having started going to art exhibits and art museums for a very, very young age, my older brother was the artist. I developed a love of certain aspects, certain stories of the art historical process, the parts where art opened up for us. So I'm just going to focus on, just rest assured that I'm aware that there are million artists out there who were opening things up for us, and that there were many, many instances in art history and history and economics and culture where things, you know, taboos and stereotypes cracked down. I'm just going to focus on three that are dear to me. And then, after that, we're going to go into the studio where I have some of my new artwork, some of which is very somewhat controversial. And then we'll talk about it. So I'll take it from the general to the personal, okay? So the three moments in art history that are very, very dear to my heart, I'm going to start with Artemisia Gentileschi. Artemisia is literally one of my superheroes of all time. She was in the 16th, she lived in the 1600s and worked in the style of Caravaggio. And she started making artwork with her, as an apprentice to her dad when she was 15 years old. Artemisia got raped by a teacher. One of her teachers raped her. And she decided to not hush about it. And she took him to court. And then it was one of the first cases in recorded history, or at least recorded history that made its way to us. We all know by now, especially of late, that there are many versions to recorded history. So she was one of the first females, especially a very highly accomplished artist female, who went out in public on the record to sue someone, to take someone to court who had raped her. And the rape case, in many, many ways, became one of the reasons why she is a muse to many young artists and olders, and middle-aged artists, male and female. I was once traveling in Italy by myself, pregnant. You'll see why I bring up the pregnancy. Think about that. And I remember I walked into the Medici Gallery, some of them. I can't remember which ones right now because when I'm a little bit nervous, I remember I forget the details. And I looked to the side, and there was Artemisia, her painting of, someone help me, Helophrenes.
Helophrenes. Right? Helophrenes.
You know what I'm talking about? Anyway, a mythical gentleman who was going to go and take Judith's queendom, and Judith beheaded him with her servant, and Artemisia Gentileschi made this painting that has now become one of the emblems of the darker side of feminism, where she is severing the head of this gentleman who I can't pronounce, Helophrenes, and then this old crone mythical woman takes the head away. So that's one of the moments where things opened up. Why do I think that this artist opened things up? Well, first of all, her talent was enormous. Second of all, she stood up for things that have been recurring in history. They simply have. I'm not angry at anyone, but I'm just saying these things have happened. And thirdly, many of her work was just badass. It was, yes, that is an art historical term. It was just so out there, and so clear, and so definitive, and so about something, that it made headway for a bunch of other little girls, and again, any age females, to come out there and start making work, and if something bad happened, saying stop, and if they needed things to be different, to making them happen differently. Many art historians like to claim that much of her fame came because of the rape case and that she's not that talented. I ask you all, please, and then you can text me later, to look at her work and see. Caravaggio is, I don't want to make that comparison. She's a genius, period, in my view. So, another moment in art history that opened things up for the artists. And this one is for all artists, not just female artists. Marcel Duchamp. No, let's go back. Let's go back.
Paris, Haussmannization.
Napoleon III hires Mr. Haussmann to redesign all of Paris. Think about it. At that time, Paris was like what New York is to us now. But it was very medieval and labyrinthine, and you couldn't get from one place to another, right? So it was clogged. And in not being able to get to one place or another, inevitably the physical format of a society will be represented in its dynamics. So the dialogue, the discourse, the social interaction was limited to a very medieval type of cityscape. So Haussmann, Napoleon III hired Haussmann, and Haussmann redesigned all of Paris, and Paris now has open spaces and avenues and the Champs-Élysées, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So how does that open things up? Literally, you can now go from here to there. You don't have to be the owner of a feudal manor. You don't have to be an aristocracy. You now have access to public spaces. The access to public spaces brought about the phenomenon of the flâneur, or the way I like to say it, the flâneuse as well. So now the average person, typically artists, can go, can walk around, can go from here to there and explore, intermingle, right? So that's another moment in recent art history where things opened up, and this is more just history or city planning. And then there's Marcel Duchamp, who's very, very dear to my heart. I won't tell you why, but if you want to know, ask me later. Marcel Duchamp was the gentleman who... Everyone was painting pretty pictures, and God bless pretty pictures. They get me out of the dark room. Okay? I have no problem with pretty pictures. I'm just going to make a claim for the opposite of pretty pictures, because that's what debunks the paradigms and allows for us to explore more openly. So everyone was painting pretty pictures and going to a salon. The salon in Paris decided who's acceptable as an artist and who isn't. And you had to go to the Académie and you had to study. And it was very, very tight. I mean, think about it. I didn't even know that women weren't recorded in art history to any significant extent, or African Americans, until I went back to school 15 years ago, to art school in the city. So he got the salon, the academic artwork. Do you guys want a chair?
We were just discussing. You carry on. They've got a schedule to keep.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt.
No worries.
Keep going, Mercedes.
I love interruptions. They keep me honest. I'll miss you.
Thank you very much. Right.
So Marcel Duchamp is living in an environment where artwork has to be a certain way, and it has to be pretty, and it has to be academic, and you need to paint the apple just so. And you need to make the beautiful flowers shine in the light. And he goes and submits, as you all know, a toilet, a urinal, a male urinal, to say the least, into the salon in Paris, which was, I don't know, like the Tate, like Tate Modern London, or the Wynn Biennial now, or many others, showcase places, Art Basel. And he gets ridiculed and criticized. And from that moment on, art shifts. We've got Marcel Duchamp's urinal. We've got, I got lost.
Okay. Just take a breath.
No, okay. I'll come right back. Dada. So, Dada started in Germany and in France, but Marcel Duchamp brought it to New York City. New York City kind of takes the place of Paris to some. Again, as I said at the beginning, there are many, many different meta-narratives to any narrative. So in the narrative that I study, Paris replaces New York as the center and the trendsetter of art. And we start seeing artworks such as Marcel Duchamp's Cobweb. He at the Armory on Park Avenue, another very prestigious art show, he created a labyrinth of thread that you had to kind of duck and walk around. And so now there's the discourse about manipulating and affecting space. Janina Toni, contemporary artist in New York City, assistant teacher when I went back to school in Arts of the City, she invited everyone to the gallery and got on all fours and started painting the floor with her hair dye. So all of a sudden, Marina Abramović, sitting at the MoMA for days and weeks on end, across from a table, people looking at her, and she looking at them and just establishing an emotional dialogue. So these things opened up art. I'm not lost now. Now I'm inspired. I just want to... These things opened up art in a way that it had not been seen for centuries. For centuries, people really, really believed that they had to do things in a certain way. Now you can pretty much do anything you want. And as long as you believe in it, and you love it, and it means something to you, then it's art. And I've heard it more times than I can handle. Well, I can handle anything at this point in life. I let it all go. But you know, oh, my little cousin could do that. Or, oh, my niece could do that. Or, that's not art. What is my favorite part of the art historical narrative? That now, that is art. And whatever you want to make, or you want to make, or you want to make, or anyone wants to make, is art. And it doesn't have to be landscape or portrait. It doesn't have to be traditional or postmodern. It doesn't have to be us versus them. We don't have to be in this polarized world of limited options. Are you red or blue? You know? Do you paint an acrylic or oil? Who cares? Are we bringing a discourse in art that is bringing the world together? Are we making something that will open the path for future generations, for other women, for other men, for other artists who want to make something enlightened? Heck yeah, why not? What, are we just going to live our mediocre, my mediocre life and just make the pretty picture and sell it for a couple thousand and then die? No, when I teach art and when I lecture about art and when I try to make art, which you'll see in a minute, I don't try, I make it. I want to invite any artist, any art aspirant, any art appreciator to understand that it has not all been done. And even if it has, a lot of it has been done, it hasn't all been done in your individual particular way. And it hasn't all been done with your individual particular passion in it. So it doesn't, for example, people look at my artwork and they say, oh, you're amateur, you're primitive. It's naive. I had 3 degrees in art and art history. So no, my work is not naive. I just choose to execute it in a specific way. So in a time where everything is so divided, don't worry, I won't say anything complicated. When everything is so divided, I think that in many, many ways it is the opportunity, the role, and the honor of the artist to bring things together, right? To cut through. And maybe, hopefully, create a new situation where you don't have to pick a side. That's it. Now we're going to go into my studio. Oh. And I'm going to expose my insights to you. So are you ready?
Yes! Yes!
Thank you, everyone. So good to have you. So this is my new series.
Thank you.
I think everyone, I'm a little mad, because as you saw, I get easily distracted. I'm like an idiot savant, or like a dog reincarnated, you know? Anything moves and I'm like, oh, lost my thread.
Doing good.
All right, welcome, everybody. Thank you. So this is my new series of paintings called About Being a Mother. And I made them, some of them 8 months ago, and I was just terrified to show them in public. Beauty is, my friends and the people in Bridgeport, not really public, you guys are kind of safe, I'm okay. But when anyone who is an artist, I'm sure that people who are about to make a sales decision or purchasing real estate or anyone else, these are just common human traits. When you're about to make a bold move or a new move or any kind of move and make a mark, you're gonna feel insecure and it's gonna be a little nauseating and you're gonna wonder about your own sanity. Come on, tell me it's everybody.
True. Yes.
Okay, so So for example, well, these are fairly obvious, right? And it's about how men are mothers too, because we all have yin and yang. So there's the female and the male in every human person. So these two boys have a Hasidic baby, and the two girls have a black baby. And why the two people? Well, some people have wondered whether it was a gay or lesbian couple, and it could be. It could be. I thought of it as the self and the shadow self. Thus, should I stay all, you know, traditional and not take any risks, or should I jump off the cliff? I had a wonderful professor at Columbia, Thomas Roma. He had a Guggenheim Fellowship, even though he was a high school dropout. That's how genius he was. And he would always say, how long is the career of an artist? How many steps in the path of an artist? And everyone would try to answer something all Ivy League and intelligent. I never tried it because he terrified me. And he would say, no, it's one step. You're standing at the edge of a precipice, and you either take that step or you don't. So I took it, especially in these over here. So I don't even know if I should talk to you about them or let you ask questions.
Talk,
yeah.
Okay.
Please talk.
All right.
Does anybody need to sit?
I recently became an empty nester. I have three beautiful sons. I adore them. And in the fact that I am quite a feminist and always was, even before it was a political thing, I've been a feminist since I was two. In spite of that, I love being a mother, and I love being mother. Again, my whole thing of it doesn't have to be one or the other. You can be both. You can be anything you want to be, especially on campus or especially on the stage. Do you see what I'm saying? So I miss my boys very, very much, and they moved away, and so this is just me trying to re-empower myself. Before I go on with that, I just wanted to share one thing that another great professor used to say, and it is that the more personal you make something, the more universal it is. So I know that sometimes artists refrain or resist making art about themselves, because it's like, well, I don't want everyone to think I'm a narcissist. First of all, we can't know the experience of John Jimenez. You know, we can only know our own experience. So you better make art or write or do about what you know, because otherwise we're just making it up. So yes, of course it's going to be about us, inevitably. Even if that lady looked completely different, it would still be about me, because I don't know the world from the experience of anyone other than myself. And also, what this professor would say is that if you make it extremely personal, it becomes more universal. Because at an essential level, all human beings have the same emotions. We love, we hate, we poop, we sleep, we're afraid of dying, etc. Yes? So this was about my empty nest and my feeling like lost without my kids, hence the bleeding umbilical cord. Of course I see that it's mildly erect. Of course I see that it could be interpreted as a penis. But I chose to do that thing that I'm suggesting that many artists before me did and do even way better, which is to not have to pick a side. It doesn't have to be this or that. It can be whatever you want it to be. And so, and she has the White House in her hand, because at the time I was very annoyed at politicians. I can't say I'm delighted right now either, but I won't go into that, don't worry. And so it's kind of about the female power taking back the White House. My next painting is going to be the Oval Room without a roof, greenery growing in it, and everyone's sitting in a circle and meditating. I started that one. Then this is, again, empty nester dragging umbilical cord. And one of the things that was beautiful is that one of the ladies here, I don't know if she's in the room or not, I don't think so, when this was all red, because I wasn't sure, because I don't remember my umbilical cord, is it mine or is it my children's umbilical cord? Mm-hmm. Whatever. She thought it was about a miscarriage, and that wasn't my message at all. So that's another thing that in contemporary art is important, to own the fact that your shit's going to be misunderstood, and that's okay. Like this one woman I made who was jumping off a cliff, taking a leap of faith, and people thought it was about suicide. You can't control the outcome. All you can control is the passion and the meaning that it has for you. And if it needs to come out, I think it better come out. So she's looking for her house, empty nest, etc. Then here, I'm standing at my son's wedding, and I looked to the side, and I saw all three of my boys who were very tall and grown men, and my ex-husband, and they were all wearing suits, and I was like, oh shit, all of those people have either come out of me or the inverse. So that was about that, and then growing up with someone who was like a mother to me, Sylvia, and my mother, you know, was busy at a dinner party wearing her pearls. I love my mother, don't get me wrong, but she was busy at a dinner party wearing her pearls. And this is how I grew up to teach art, and I tend to gravitate to communities where I teach children who look a lot like Sylvia did. So, I am so grateful that you all listen. I hope that if anything, you remember that I want to propose the idea that we don't have to pick sides in anything, but especially not in art, because at the end of the day, you don't even vote about art, right? And that we can find a common ground. And that it is the brave person, not that I'm brave, I'm just saying, if someone is brave and they go forth and break that divisive opposition of this or that and make something that is something else, I think that that will create a better society, that eventually we will all be more connected and more tolerant with one another. Of course I was terrified of painting someone who is not my own race. And people came in and they were looking at it, and I was like, oh my God, I hope I've honored them. And guess what? I got more compliments from people who are not my own race than from people of my own race. So yes, sometimes it's going to be uncomfortable, and sometimes we're going to take that step off the cliff. But I think there's still time to make things a little bit better and more user-friendly and stop bickering about this or that, you know? Black or white, red or blue. Oh my God. That's all. Do you have any questions or comments? Yes.
Yes, thank you, Mercedes. That was excellent. I loved your talk.
Thank you so much.
And I'm wondering a couple of things, so maybe you could just flesh out a little bit. So you're saying basically that you're feeling like art is a vehicle for communication,
yes.
Correct? Do I understand that correctly?
As, amongst many other things, yes.
Yeah, and so along with that, so how is it that you know, your work is deliberating that, and also, why did you choose this more primitive style? Like, you know, you said you deliberate.
Oh, great, great, yes. Okay. So I think my work is delivering it because it taps into the subconscious. Things that are yucky and that people don't want to talk about seem to be my favorite. Except when I make pretty pictures for the art fair. I don't want to scare the children. I love children. All right? So I'm just drawn to the subconscious. Probably those 17 years of therapy that obviously didn't work very well. But I just like everything that is anathema, taboo. Oh, no. You can't disagree with that, because otherwise that means that you're a... or the earth. So that's why. It's just a natural gravitation, because of my own personal biography, to things that others may not want to talk about that I have no problem talking about. If you're going to love me, you're going to love me. If you're not, you're not. Whether I talk about bloody and vocal cords that look like penises or not. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's why how I think they communicate. I think they communicate to the global subconscious, to the female subconscious, and oftentimes to the male subconscious too, because at the end of the day, everyone came out of a womb and had to cut their umbilical cord, some better than others. Just, you know, mama's voice and stuff. So that's that. And then the other question is, why do I choose this style? I'm going to tell you why I choose this style. I started out painting in this style many years ago. My brother was a painter, and he was very sophisticated in his style and very academic. And so I was a fashion designer first, and then I just started doodling. And I thought, I can't compare with him. He's the artist, and his work was so detailed. So I started making little doodles and thought nothing of it, and then I liked my doodles. And then I decided to go back to art school. First, I had gone to art history school. And so when I went to art school, I learned all these techniques, and I learned all these shading mechanisms and realistic renderings. And it was great, and I loved getting an A+. But I felt that I had murdered my voice. And then when I started teaching children, I was like, wait, that's how I want to paint. So that's why.
Thank you.
That's all. Not only musicians go crazy on stage, huh?